I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Spring is in full bloom, and for a lot of kids, that means stuffy noses, itchy eyes, and plenty of miserable days indoors. Today, the children's doctors are in with the latest research on allergies. They'll also discuss treatment methods, both new and old, options such as over-the-counter medicine, allergy shots, and more. Listen in and find out how you can help your child through these pollen-laden days. Let us hear from you, too. Is your kid having trouble with hay fever? What's worked for you? You can share your experiences with us. Then we bring you this week's Local Listen. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. It's springtime, which means here comes the allergies. If you suffer from them, you already know that. For kids, though, the suffering can be especially hard to watch. Allergies often are passed down from parent to child, but some kids have allergies even if no family member is allergic, and those who are allergic to one substance are likely to be allergic to others as well. How can we help our kids? What types of medications work best? And at what point can you start someone on allergy shots? We'll kick around all that today in this latest edition of our Children's Development Series. With us, Dr. Jay Portnoy. He's with Children's Mercy Hospital, where he's Division Director for Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. He's also a professor of pediatrics at the UMKC School of Medicine. Jay, welcome back. So good to have you.
Great to be here.
Dr. Natasha Burgert is also back. She's a pediatrician at Pediatric Associates of Kansas City. She's one of our regular guests on these programs. And Natasha, welcome to you as well.
Hi.
And if our listeners have questions about their kids and their allergies, our number here, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let's start with the basics here. Jay, what is an allergy exactly? I mean, why do some people have them, and why in the world did God make them?
Oh, God made them to take care of allergists, of course.
Just that simple, right?
Absolutely.
Full employment for people like you.
It's job security.
Yeah.
Now, allergy is an immune response that the human body makes to things in the environment that normally would not cause a problem. We develop this immune response in order to fight parasites and other infectious organisms as our species evolved. But since we don't have those types of things here now, we have a much more hygienic environment. Our immune system has nothing to do with that, so it tends to react to other things in the environment like pollens, molds, furry animals, dust mite, things like that.
Natasha, just from my reading, I get the sense that this is the immune system overreacting in some ways. Explain that to me.
Well, these usually are very benign substances that these kids are reacting to. So, for example, I have no reactivity when I see a dog and have one in my house and enjoy having its company. But for some little kiddos, that same stimulus is going to react with their immune system uniquely in order to have symptoms of allergy, anywhere from just a sniffle and runny eyes to all the way having an asthma attack, kind of depending on how reactive their immune system is to that particular allergen.
So again, it is an overreaction.
To an otherwise harmless substance.
You know, every year, Jay, people tend to say that this is the worst allergy season ever. I hear it every spring. You hear it in the fall as well. How does this one rank?
Well, it's the worst allergy season ever.
By far, right?
Well, you know, we've been tracking allergy seasons for the last 20 years. And in fact, a few weeks ago, we looked at the pollen counts from 20 years ago, late 1990s. And at that time, it was very unusual for pollen counts to get up over 100. We might get pollen counts in the 70s, 80s. If it got up to 100, 200, that was really uncommon. And very occasionally, we'd get a spike up to 800. Now, it's typical to see counts in the thousands. So the pollen counts have really gone higher. There's a lot more pollen. And more important, the pollen is more potent, so it causes more disease.
Why is it more potent?
Well, we've been able to track it to a specific correlation between that and the levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's that climate change, global warming phenomenon. But clinical studies were plants have been grown in greenhouses under different carbon dioxide concentrations have shown that the plants produce more pollen and the pollen is more potent. So it really is contributing to more disease. More people have allergies now, and the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere is directly related to that.
So take care of global warming, and you take care of allergies.
Yeah, well, that's one part of it. That's one part of it.
That's kind of amazing.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Right now, how high are the pollen and ragweed counts? Because you brought some numbers with you, Jay.
Right. Well, today's pollen count is 2,342. Again, it's 2,000. That's a huge pollen count. What that means is that anybody who is allergic to these pollens, even to a small extent, is likely to have lots of symptoms. The types of pollens that we're having now is tree pollen. Tree pollen comes in a whole bunch of different little mini seasons because each kind of tree has its time to pollinate. We've already passed the early seasons with the junipers and the elm trees. Then we've been through the maple trees already, and now we're into the ashes, oaks, and birches. Huh. And in a few weeks, we're going to start seeing walnuts and hickories and some of the late season trees.
What reading should people look at to get a sense of, you know, how bad the pollen count is? Is it the pollen number itself?
Well, the number is the number of grains of pollen per cubic meter of air. We perform this count every morning. We publish it. It's possible to go to the Children's Mercy website.
And how do you count all this? How do you count all this? Do you sit around first thing in the morning and count it all?
We literally do. There's an air sampler that sucks air in through a little slit onto a microscope slide. And then we have a microscopist who literally sits there and counts each pollen grain.
No.
Because you have to determine what kind of pollen it is also. So it takes a lot of time to do that. The higher the pollen count is, the longer it takes. So if the count doesn't come out until 10 or 11 in the morning, it's because it took that long to physically count the grains.
I thought this was all automatic by some machine or something.
They're working on that, but an automatic machine to do pollen count has not yet been developed.
You know, is spring, Natasha, the toughest time of year for allergy sufferers, or is it fall, or what is it these days?
Well, we see a lot in spring in the office, I think, because it kind of falls right after flu season too, so it kind of blends together. Kids have had runny noses and colds and coughs during the entire winter season, then all of a sudden they're still coughing and now they still have a runny nose, and that springtime allergy surge kind of all blends together. So at this time of year, not only for our kids that really know that they have spring allergies, they come in for that purpose, but a lot of times the parents are asking, I don't know if this is new allergies or is this just another cold?
So the symptoms of allergy would be what?
So symptoms of allergy for an environmental allergy are typically going to be the classic things you see in an adult. You're going to have itchy red eyes. You're going to have runny nose, congestion, coughing. In kids, sometimes you just see more ear infections. Sometimes you see sore throats. You see snoring sometimes in kids. So
Snoring.
So if your immune system is more inflamed, your tonsils, your adenoids, those tissues in your mouth will sometimes get swollen too. And sometimes when that happens, kids will snore. And so I have a few kids that when allergy season comes around, they start snoring more, and that's the trigger. But again, a lot of these symptoms coincide with regular viral colds, and so sometimes it is a little hard to tease out which is a cold and which is allergy.
Even for you have a hard time noticing the difference sometimes.
The symptoms are really similar, and until you really see a seasonal pattern with your kiddo, sometimes it's hard to tell if that's allergies, and that only comes from time, right? Because if they're only a few years old, we haven't seen those season variabilities very often with our kids, so sometimes it is hard to tell.
Jay, is fall the second worst time of year?
Oh, sure. So the spring is the tree season. Once we get into May and June, then we're into the grass pollen season. That's one giant 6-week season that makes people really sick. Then in July and August, the pollen counts go down because it gets so hot and dry. That's when allergists take their vacation. And then starting on August 15th, we start getting ragweed pollen. And it's pretty reliably starts at that time. Ragweed goes up. It peaks on September 10th. That's pretty much the average. And usually by the early part of October, it stops. However, it's about 2 to 3 weeks longer now than it was 20 years ago. So the duration of the season has extended. But the second season clearly is the ragweed season in the fall.
And as someone who has suffered from allergies myself, I mean, people just do suffer here, right? I mean, it's an awful thing on a lot of levels.
Well, just think of the worst cold that you have had, and then think about having it for 6 weeks every year when the weather is nice and you'd prefer to be outside having a good time.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Okay, 816-235-2888 is the phone number here. We're talking about kids and allergies and what to do about them. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Besides dealing with pollen and seasonal allergies, what else can get kids sneezing and itchy? Because I've seen dust on the list, and of course, dog and cat hair. Jay, what else goes there?
Well, if we want to talk about outdoor allergens, the other thing is mold spores. And the mold count today is 2,369, which is actually low because spores are much smaller, so there can be a lot more of them without causing as many symptoms. We're seeing kind of wet weather spores because there have been a lot of rain in the last week or two. So mold spores can cause a lot of more asthma than nasal allergy symptoms.
And what is a spore? What is that?
A spore is a small particle that comes off of a mold, and it's how molds spread from one place to another, so they get into the air.
Okay.
So spores usually cause asthma more than nasal allergies. Those are the outdoor aeroallergens. Then the indoor aeroallergens would be furry animals, dog and cat, dust mites, which live in your house dust. People also can be allergic to cockroaches, which is pretty gross, and rodents if you have an infestation.
Not to belabor the point, but why would you be allergic to cockroaches?
Because cockroaches have allergens that you can become immune to, allergic to.
Where? They just carry them?
When they die, they break down, their fecal pellets get into the dust, and after a while you start inhaling cockroach pieces. It's really gross.
Yeah, it sounds like really gross. Right. And, you know, I'm always amazed, Natasha, how often families might have a dog or a cat and a kid might suffer from allergies related to the dog or cat, but they're keeping the dog or cat. The pet's not going anywhere.
Yeah, the pet doesn't go anywhere. And usually for those families, I've had a few that I have given the pet away because the allergies are so severe. But for kids that have really, really mild allergies, yes, they usually do stick around. Interestingly enough, though, if the dog has been there in utero and kind of been there the whole time, the less likely the kids will react to it. So it's usually a new pet is typically what I see, that it's a new family member that's causing the problem.
So if a child is in utero throughout a pregnancy and there's a dog or a cat in the house, they adjust somehow.
Yeah, they're less reactive.
That's interesting.
They can develop a tolerance to the pet. And then we end up with what's called the Thanksgiving effect. So the child grows up with the dog or the cat in the house. They're able to tolerate it. Then they go away to college. And when they come back for Thanksgiving, they become really sick because of the pet that they've lost their tolerance to.
Oh. That's pretty common.
It happens all the time.
Wow. 816-235-2888 is our number here. Kids and allergies is the topic. Let's go to Kim from Belton on the Missouri side. Kim, good morning.
Hi, good morning. My question is, you know, we suffer from allergies in our house all the time, the itchy eyes, the drainage and all that. But this year it seems to have settled in our ear for whatever reason. Is that normal? It's never happened before.
Why would allergies spread and the impact, the symptom would be in the ears?
Well, the reason that you would get pressure and fluid in the ears is because the eustachian tube, which is the tube that connects the middle ear with the nose, gets swollen and inflamed. And so it doesn't clear, it doesn't equalize the pressure effectively. And so nasal congestion can contribute to ear symptoms. And that's a direct consequence of having allergies. But allergy particles themselves don't have a particular location that they know to go to. They generally go to the nose, cause inflammation, and if they block the eustachian tube, that will lead to ear infection.
Can you do anything about that, Jay?
Keep the nose open with medications and other things that we use to treat allergies.
Sometimes kids will also be dizzy when that happens too, like some of the bigger kids that have eustachian tube dysfunction due to allergies come in complaints with dizziness, which is a little different in kids than adults.
I hope that helps, Kim.
Thank you.
You bet. Let's go to Sarah from Overland Park. Sarah, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, I have my child home today because he's been coughing for a month, and he just seems like he needs rest. And now I'm wondering if this is actually just allergies. Does rest help?
Natasha, you said it's sometimes really hard to tell the difference.
It is hard to tell, Sarah, but it's definitely something that this time of year I would keep on my list of things to consider. Sometimes kids will just present with cough, a cough or an asthma, perhaps, or even just the postnasal drip that these allergens can trigger can be a cough trigger for a lot of kids. So sometimes with kids that we're not quite sure, we kind of try an antihistamine if your pediatrician believes that's safe to see if that changes anything, or perhaps a nasal spray. But if things continue and it gets a little confusing, that's where our allergist friends come into play, like Dr. Portner, that can do testing for that and see if the allergy triggers are contributing to that cough.
So does rest help or not?
Rest always helps coughs, because usually the kids aren't sleeping well, right? So rest is always certainly helpful. However, if it is an allergen trigger, using an agent or some sort of intervention to block that trigger is going to be more helpful.
Okay.
Thanks, Sarah. Good luck.
Thanks.
Jay, do you test for allergies differently today than you did 15 years ago?
Well, there's two ways to test for allergies. There's a skin test and there's a blood test. The skin test involves taking little plastic things that we use, and we prick the skin on the patient's back with a number of different ones. We wait 20 minutes, see if there's a reaction. It reacts like an itchy hive. The blood test involves taking blood from the arm. We send it to the lab where they measure the allergy antibodies. But both of the tests give the same kind of information. So I would think of them as being kind of interchangeable. It's not like one is more accurate than the other. I usually offer my patients a choice. Would you like to have the blood test? Would you like to have the skin test?
It doesn't matter to you.
It doesn't matter to me. I can help them make a decision about interventions. I can prescribe allergy shots. I can get the information that I need from either type of test.
Yeah. I'm wondering, do we know what percentage of kids or even of all people suffer from allergies? Is there a number out there that flies around?
Yeah, the number of people who have nasal allergies is about 20%, or 1 in 5 people.
Wow. Wow.
So it's a very common problem.
Yeah. So it's not unusual at all. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that figure the same in other countries around the world?
Well, it's less common in third world countries where they have more, where the hygiene is less good. There's more of those parasites, so the immune system is fighting those things instead of making allergies. In the developed world, though, it's pretty constant, about 1 in 5.
Mm-hmm. How severe can this be for some kids? What are some of the most severe cases you've seen?
Well, if a kid has really severe allergies, then it can also lead to asthma. So we're dealing with asthma and nasal allergies together. They're not able to sleep at night. They miss a lot of school. They ultimately end up in the hospital with an asthma attack, and we have to deal with that. So it can be very severe.
Mm-hmm. Natasha, you must see some cases that are pretty off the charts occasionally.
Yeah, we do. And it's so troubling when you see these little people come in and their eyes are nearly swollen shut and their just faces are a mess and they're coughing all the time. But I think that the good news is a lot of the interventions are available over the counter. We have a lot of great drugs that are available over the counter for parents to try if they think their kid's having an allergic reaction even before their allergic reactivity, even before they come and see me. And there's also some other things that we can do that are not drug-based, by staying inside, using your air conditioning, make sure you're taking showers regularly, cleaning your bedding, using nasal saline rinses. Like, there's other things you can do, too, to decrease that load in your kids if you don't like taking meds.
Saline rinses, you're talking about what?
Like nasal rinses, like a neti pot or something like that, which you can do in children as well. Sinus rinses, yeah.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about kids and their allergies, and we'll talk more about treatments in our second half. And later on this hour, Bill Brownlee is here with this week's Local Listen. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the program, we examined the impact of the Charlotte Street Foundation on Kansas City's art scene over the last 20 years. You can hear that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date, or you can go to the NPR One app. Tomorrow, a guide that brings the landscapes of I-70 to life on a long drive across Kansas, and we'll explore the difficulties that rural gay men face when they decide to come out. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. This morning, we're talking about kids and allergies. Dr. Natasha Burgert is here with Pediatric Associates of Kansas City, right there over on Broadway. And Dr. Jay Portnoy is here with Children's Mercy Hospital, where he's Division Director for Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Don from Waldo called in to ask a question. He couldn't stay on the air. Can allergies cause chronic asthma, Jay? What does it mean for long-term asthma prospects?
And the answer is yes. If you have allergies, it often starts with nasal allergies, hay fever, and then it can develop into asthma as it progresses on. So absolutely, that's something that we concern ourselves about, and it's why when we have young children with nasal allergies, we like to treat them aggressively in an attempt to hopefully prevent them from developing asthma.
Natasha, if parents suffer from seasonal allergies, how likely is it that their children are also going to suffer? How strong is that correlation?
Well, if you have a parent that's kind of allergic to anything, you are more likely to be allergic to things, whether it be food allergies or seasonal allergies, but it's not necessarily correlative. Like, you can certainly have kids that have seasonal allergies and their parents have never experienced those symptoms, although it typically does run in families.
Okay. And what are the differences between children who suffer from seasonal allergies and adult sufferers? Is there oftentimes, if a parent's suffering badly, the kid's going to have the same tough reaction to it, Jay?
Yeah, well, the tendency to develop allergy is inherited. If none of your parents have allergies, then there's a 10% chance of the child developing it. If one parent has allergies, it's 30 to 50%. And if both parents have it, it's 70 to 90%.
Okay.
So you got to choose your parents wisely.
Good luck with that. All right. Turning to treatments, are there any new treatments, drugs, research to offer relief for allergy sufferers? Are you seeing much out there?
Well, I think the thing that's changed the most in the last few years is the fact that many of the treatments are now over the counter, the ones that used to be prescription medicines.
Yeah, that's right.
So we
Why did that happen?
Well, I think it happened because the pharmaceutical companies decided that they could make more money by doing it that way.
Okay.
I'm sure that's the reason.
Yeah.
We have a lot of really effective allergy medicines. There are non-sedating antihistamines that are available in most parents.
Meaning they don't make you sleepy.
They don't make you sleepy.
They used to. Yeah.
Yeah. The first generation, like Benadryl, you'd fall right to sleep. We recommend that people use the less sedating ones. And the reason that that's an advantage is because you can increase the dose, too. And sometimes if you talk to your doctor, the increased dose might be more effective. There's also some nasal sprays that are extremely effective. There's two types of nasal sprays we use. There's a steroid nasal spray that reduces inflammation, so that's good for congestion. And there's also an antihistamine nose spray that's good for sneezing, itching, and runny nose.
Huh.
And sometimes if you have really bad nasal allergies, it helps to use a combination of the two.
Can treatments for adults also work for kids, Jay?
They're very similar to each other. There's not that much difference between how we treat adults and how we treat children.
Okay. What about, Natasha, over-the-counter medications that parents can give to children with mild allergies? Are there things you might recommend, or I don't know how far you want to go here.
Yeah, so you know, if a kid coming into my office with the allergic salute, are you familiar with the allergic salute?
No.
Kids will take an open hand, and they'll put their nose to their palm, and they will do an upward gesture as they're wiping their snot as a tip of the hat motion. So as they're coming in with the allergic salute, typically the first thing I recommend is one of two things. Usually I recommend a nasal spray if they're willing to tolerate it. So we have nasal sprays available over the counter.
Is that hard for some kids?
Yeah, some kids just don't like stuff in their nose, but they work really well, and then we don't have to worry about a lot of systemic side effects if they're used appropriately and if they're not used excessively long term. But some of these sprays are available for kids as young as the age of 2, so that's kind of that's nice. If they're spray avoidant and they don't like that up their nose, then we go to the oral antihistamines, which are our Zyrtex and Claritins and all of those things too, which come in liquid formulations and they also come in chewable tablets. And talking to your doctor about what dose is going to be best, just like Dr. Portnoy mentioned, sometimes we can tinker with that a little bit based on their symptoms.
What else are you recommending these days, Jay, when it comes to these kinds of treatments?
Well, with the extremely high pollen counts, we're seeing a lot of patients with eye symptoms. And so eye drops is something that many doctors forget to ask about. Do you have itchy, watery eyes?
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a big problem with the really high pollen counts. There are some effective over-the-counter eye drops that can be used. But one thing that's important to remember is that you want to keep your eye drops in the refrigerator. They're a lot more soothing if they're cold.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
I've never heard anybody say that before.
Yeah.
This doesn't make it more effective. It just feels better.
Well, it both is probably the case. You can use eye drops more frequently than is recommended also, but it's important to use the right kind of eye drops because some of the eye drops, the decongestant ones, can actually cause more inflammation. So you have to use appropriate allergy eye drops. I would ask your doctor which ones to use.
Okay. Let's go back to some calls here as we talk about children and allergies. Our number, 816-235-2888. Again, you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let's go to Florence from Kansas City, Kansas. Florence, good morning.
Good morning, host Steve and guest. My question is there a connection between poison ivy and today's topic of spring allergies? A friend of mine broke out with a face rash. Oh, a few days ago, and it was mentioned he had cut grass, and it was a possibility of it being poison ivy.
Hmm. What about the connection between allergies and poison ivy?
Well, poison ivy is a different kind of immune response. Allergy is an immune response that's caused by an antibody called IgE, and it causes an immediate sneezing, itching, watery eyes, that type of reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Poison ivy is caused by the actual resin from the plant getting on your skin, and by coming into contact causes an immune response. It's called a delayed hypersensitivity response. It's a contact dermatitis. And so that's the kind of reaction that usually happens after a day or two, and it can last for days to a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a different kind of immune response than an allergy.
Okay. Let's go to Allie from Lawrence. Allie, good morning.
Good morning, Steve, and hello, guests. It's been fascinating to listen to you all talk.
Great. Go ahead, Allie.
Okay, I'm an adult. I got allergies when I got pregnant, and I don't know why that happened, but I became severely allergic, you know, during all the pollen times, just like you're talking about, and went through all kinds of treatments for years and years and years. And so this went on for probably 18 or 20 years, and I discovered this thing called Sinua Rega, and it's a nasal spray with salt in it, like you've all been talking about. But the difference is that it has oregano oil in it and a few other oils like sage and clove. And these things seem to work in the antihistamine field amazingly for me. So I did it for about a year and a half, pretty constantly during all the pollen season.
Yeah, Allie, let me get a reaction here from Dr. Portnoy. What do you think about that?
About nasal spray that has this other stuff
yes,
in it?
Yes, right.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with that.
Okay. Are there non-medicinal options out there, or are we reaching here a little bit?
There are many different things that are kind of alternative, homeopathic remedies and so on, and some of them may be effective, some of them not. The thing is that they haven't really been studied in the same rigorous way that the medications that I usually prescribe have been. So if you find that it works for you, that's great, but it's not something that I'm that familiar with.
Okay. Natasha, how effective are prescription antihistamines compared to over-the-counter products? Is there a big gap in terms of the quality and the impact they'll have on a patient?
No, there's not going to be that much of a difference. I think
because as a consumer, you think there would be a big difference.
No, there's not that much of a difference. But I do think what you can use your physician for with using those products is the dosing, because I think sometimes it's a little misleading, especially for kids. It says on the box, call your doctor and that kind of stuff too. You don't want to necessarily guess. So there's no antihistamine necessarily that I can prescribe that's going to be the magic bullet. I'm going to direct you to your local pharmacy to kind of tinker with the different things that you find there. And I do have, you know, anecdotally, and Dr. Portnoy may be able to speak to this a little bit more, but anecdotally, I do have families where just one works better than the other for whatever reason. Claritin works better than Zyrtec or whatever. I'm not partial, but it's kind of...
Does it make a difference sometimes?
It's kind of, I hear that a lot. And so for some kids, they've been on Zyrtec forever. and no, it's not working anymore. Should we try Claritin? Sure, try Claritin. It works better, and vice versa. And so anecdotally, I see that a lot. So it is a little bit of tinkering. I'd love to hear Dr. Portney's opinion for that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of the antihistamines are more potent than others. Cetirizine or Zyrtec is a more potent antihistamine than loratadine or Claritin. I often hear people say that I used the antihistamine and it kind of wore off or didn't work as well. But the fact is the antihistamines work just as well after you've taken them for a while that they do before. The reason they wear off is because the pollen count goes up, and so you're sicker and it overwhelms the ability of the antihistamine to control it. But it may help to increase the dose of the antihistamine.
So if you've used a medication for a year or two, there's no reason to think it's
not going
to
stop
working. In effectiveness. Yeah.
Right. It'll continue to work as well as it did before. You may need to increase the dose during the peak season and then decrease it during the off season.
What about that? What if the package says, like for Zyrtec, take one tablet, I'm making this up, every 6 or 12 hours. Can you take two sometimes? And does that make a difference?
Yeah. I mean, if the package will say take one tablet once a day,
right,
which is great. That's what the FDA approval is for. But in an allergy practice, sometimes a patient can take it twice a day. And there's nothing wrong with that. The thing that limits the dose is sedation, making you too sleepy. And if it doesn't make you sleepy, increasing the dose will give you more benefit.
Ah.
I'm not saying that patients should just go out and take 10 times the dose or something like that, because there is a risk. But you, with your doctor's assistance, you can titrate the dose up and down to get the control that you need.
Again, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking this morning about children and allergies, having a good conversation here about how to deal with all these kinds of things. Dr. Jay Portnoy is here with Children's Mercy. Dr. Natasha Burgert with Pediatric Associates of Kansas City. Our number here, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. You know, Jay, when you were talking about the increasing levels of pollen and allergens in the air, if these trend levels continue, are we going to see these numbers spiking even more dramatically 3, 4, 7 years down the road? Or what are we in for here? Are we going to be a nation of allergy sufferers come 2030?
Sounds wonderful to me. No, I mean, I think that's true, but there is a limit. Up above a certain amount of pollen, having more pollen is probably not going to increase your symptoms. What happens, instead of making your symptoms worse, a higher percent of the population will start to develop allergies. So instead of 20%, it may go up to 30 or even 40%. And that's the trend that we're seeing, is a higher percent of people having allergies.
Now, Natasha, in your practice, are there more patients coming in these days suffering from allergies than you've seen even 5 or 10 years ago?
Well, that's probably a little, yeah, the answer is yes, Steve, but I think that's a little function of my patients getting older. The more seasons that you live through, then the more likely you're going to have some more seasonal reactivity that you can see. And as the kids get older and they're starting to have symptoms that are impeding sports practice, or certainly like Sarah mentioned, where it's keeping the kids home from school with a cough for a month, that's when we start to lean into Dr. Portner and his team, because those might be kids that qualify for allergy shots. And I'd love to hear from him about what kinds of kids he would what kind of kids he'd like to see or recommend allergy shots to, because I think that's an important part of the discussion.
I was going to get there. Yeah, what about allergy shots for kids? Does that make sense or not?
Right. It makes absolute sense. If you think about it, when we treat people with medicines, we have to do it all the time. We're not really fixing the allergies. The natural history is that a child will have allergies into their 30s and 40s. They might have 20 to 30 years of allergy symptoms.
But it does fade the older you get.
As you get into your 50s and 60s, the allergies will decrease. But when you're in your mid-adult life, you're likely to have many decades of allergy symptoms.
Yeah, I've noticed in my own life they're fading away, which is a wonderful thing. I used to fear the spring. No longer.
Right.
You know?
So the medications don't do anything to change that natural history. The thing that can change it, though, is allergy shots. So if you think about it, what allergy shots is it an attempt to immunize you to the things you're allergic to. So if you're allergic to ragweed, we could give you an injection of ragweed extract and you'd make antibodies to it and then you'd become immune to it. The problem, of course, is that if you're allergic to ragweed, you'd have an allergic reaction to that shot. Mm. So when we give ragweed allergy shots, we have to start with a very low dose of ragweed and then have you come back week after week, slowly increasing the dose until we get to a high enough dose where you become immunized to the ragweed, and then your symptoms get better.
And you can do this for kids?
You can do this for kids. You can do it for adults, anybody.
Like 6-year-olds?
we can do, I'll go down to 4 years old, below 4 year olds. It actually works too, but I think it's not nice to give 2 year olds shots every week.
Even four year olds have shown that they can take advantage of something like this.
And the advantage of allergy shots is that it allows you to shorten the amount of time you have allergies, so you can go into remission and no longer need the medications and have the symptoms after you've had a course of allergy shots. In addition, if you have nasal allergies, allergy shots can prevent the development of asthma. So, and it can also prevent you from developing new sensitivities. So there's a lot of advantages to allergy shots.
But again, just to be clear, we're talking about a fairly significant commitment of time and even dollars to get through this course of shots.
It is a commitment to getting allergy shots, though there are alternative methods of immunizing patients to allergens that are coming online now. So,
for example,
well, we have these sublingual tablets now. They're dissolvable tablets. That you put under your tongue once a day that will also serve the same function as allergy shots.
Is that right?
Right now there are tablets available for grass pollen and ragweed pollen, and if you start using them on a daily basis under your tongue, starting 3 months before the season, then you can prevent the allergy symptoms from taking place.
That's a great alternative to shots because, again, with a shot, you have to drive and go to the doctor's office and wait for your shot, right. And it's very time-consuming.
Well, the reason that we have people with allergy shots go to the doctor's office is because there's a risk of having an allergic reaction. So mm-hmm. you need to be somewhere safe where an allergic reaction can be treated. Mm-hmm. Safety has to play a role. With the sublingual tablets, the risk of anaphylaxis, allergic reaction, is low enough that it's felt to be safe to do it at home.
Okay. Let's go to some calls here. Folks been waiting here just a little bit. Michelle from Lawrence. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning. My son is 7.5 and recently diagnosed with allergy-induced asthma. And one of the allergens that showed up for him when they did the testing was a particular cedar that's used in a lot of mulches. And I was wondering if there's other things that people put down this time of year for their yards and gardens that might potentially cause flare-ups.
Ah, interesting. What are you seeing, Jay?
Well, I mean, things that are on the ground like mulches and things like that usually don't provide a lot of aeroallergens. The rain will wash it into the ground, and they're pretty inert. So
rain? We haven't had a lot of rain. Well, lately we did have a lot of rain, but
usually if there's like cedar, that would be the cedar pollen rather than the wood that would be in the mulch.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if
okay.
So that's probably what you were looking at.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hope that helps, Michelle. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's go to Justin from Leawood. Justin, you're on Up to Date with our allergy doctors. Good morning.
Good morning. My question was about to eating local honey, if there's any truth to that in helping allergies. And if it does, is it just another tool in the tool bag, or is it something that you could eventually get away from the allergy medicine?
Does local honey help? I've heard that before too. Mm, yeah,
I've heard it many times.
And does it?
Well, if you think about it, bees collect pollen, but the pollen that they collect comes from flowers rather than from weeds. Flowers are entomophilous plants that don't put pollen into the air, so those aren't the kinds of plants that people tend to be allergic to.
Ah.
The entomophilous plants, which are wind-pollinated, are the ones that we become allergic to, but those aren't the ones the bees go to. So the kind of pollen that would be in honey is not necessarily the kind that's causing nasal allergies. Certainly, it's a very tasty thing to do, and I have no objection to eating honey.
Nor do I.
It may be worth a try.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how effective it will be.
Okay. Thank you, Justin. Raised a good point. Appreciate it. Let's go to Ashley from Lenexa. Ashley, you're on Up to Date.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 7-year-old son who has chronic allergies. He's also a redhead. And our doc, we've had him on 5 milligrams of montelukast for a while now. And every time I go in, take him in to see the allergist, the allergist is always asking if we can take him off the medication. And we tried it at one point during wintertime, and all of my son's symptoms just came roaring back, and we just got him right back on the medication. And my question is, are we doing any long-term damage by keeping him on the medication, or since he really does need it, and if we should get him off, what are our alternatives?
long-term damage from allergy medication, Dr. Portnoy?
Yeah, these medicines, for the most part, are pretty safe. The antihistamines are extremely safe to take over long periods of time. The Montelukast, which is the brand name is Singulair, it's also a relatively safe medicine. I mean, there are mild side effects, but long-term, it's not going to cause any significant harm.
Right.
My suspicion is that the doctor is asking you about that because we always want to use the least amount of medicine that can control the symptoms. And some people take medicine all the time who may not need to. So it's always a good idea to find out if you really need to take medicine and not take it if you don't.
Hmm.
Dr. Portnoy, I would love your opinion on this, too. I have a lot of patients that come into my office who are on nasal sprays and get really worried that their kids on nasal sprays are not going to grow. It seems that's a popular thing on the internet that people find, and so they stop taking their nasal sprays. Could you comment on your experience with nasal sprays and kids growing?
Right. So the nasal sprays have been studied, as well as the inhaled corticosteroids. We're talking about steroids now and growth, which steroids have been shown to stunt growth a little bit with in the inhaler form. With nasal sprays, though, that doesn't seem to have been a problem. When they've studied that, it hasn't caused a problem with growth.
Mm-hmm. And that works. That
and
works
it's
okay.
Safe, and you can use it over a long period of time.
Okay, that's good news.
Now, I've read that one of the biggest mysteries here is why allergies come and go over the course of a lifetime and then even come and go again. People tend to experience intense allergies between the ages of 5 and 16. Then maybe some people say they get a couple decades off, they come back. Why is that?
Well, it has a lot to do with exposure. So if you're exposed to something, you tend to develop allergies to it, and then the exposure might change if you move into a different environment.
Right.
If I move from Kansas City to California, I'm not going to be allergic to the California things initially, but after a number of years, I will become allergic to it.
Why not initially?
Because I haven't seen those things before. They're different.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be exposed to allergens for a year or two before you become allergic to them.
Ah, I see. And that begins to explain why they come and go over the course of a lifetime here.
They can, yes.
Yeah, okay. Anything else about Natasha you might recommend as we leave this conversation today? Should people consider nasal rinse more often, taking showers more often? Would that make a bigger difference than people want to acknowledge?
Well, I think that does make a difference. We know that those nasal rinses and just getting that pollen off of our bodies and off of our bed sheets are certainly an important part to this too. But I think a bigger message is that we have lots of different alternatives as well in case those things aren't working. And to Dr. Portnoy's point that he just mentioned too, we do have to live through those seasons a couple of times, and so it's very rare that little babies would have seasonal allergies. I get that question a lot too, so we don't have to worry about that as much as for those new parents.
That's Dr. Natasha Burgert. She's with Pediatric Associates of Kansas City. Dr. Jay Portnoy with Children's Mercy Hospital. Thank you both for a very illuminating conversation. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Coming up, Bill Brownlee in this week's Local Listen. KCUR contributor Bill Brownlee is back, and he brought this week's Local Listen. And Bill, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
You want to talk about a new friend of mine, Eddie Moore and the Outer Circle, a jazzer.
Eddie Moore, in my mind, is the most exciting jazz musician in Kansas City.
Oh, that's great. Because?
He is able to meld different styles of music, including hip-hop and funk and pop, into jazz seamlessly.
Let's listen to a little bit of Eddie Moore and the Outer Circle. That's his group, the LBC. This is from his 2016 album, Kings and Queens. Obviously, Bill, there's a jazz tinge to this tune, so I enjoy that, but it's also distinctly modern, too. What do you like about Eddie Moore in the Outer Circle?
It's the groove. It's all about the groove with Eddie Moore.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have that, that you know, that just, that you could dance to this music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can stand and move. You know, that's what differentiates Eddie from, you know, a lot of musicians in Kansas City and around the world.
I was going to say, they lay down a pretty thick sound for a small ensemble. So who is the Outer Circle?
It centers on, in my mind, the bassist DeAndre Manning. He is one of the undersung talents here in this town.
Huh.
Eddie plays with different drummers usually. In this case, I think it's Pat Adams, but
Ryan Lee's been there.
But Ryan Lee's been there, and that's Adam Schlossman on guitar, another fine young talent here in town. And that's the thing about Eddie and the people he works with. They tend to be around his age, about 30.
Hmm.
And they have that youthful sensibility.
They've got a show in Westport on Friday at the Riot Room, I believe. Tell us what's going to happen there.
Yeah, Eddie typically, although he did play the Blue Room last night, typically he is receptive to playing in rock venues. And Friday he's at the Riot Room in Westport, which, you know, usually hosts rock and hip-hop artists, and he'll fit in just fine there, as you can hear. This works in that setting.
Where else can we hear these guys, Bill?
Eddie plays, he hosts a jam session every Wednesday, including tonight at Californo's in Westport.
With his band?
With whoever wants to sit in. So okay. If you want to sing along tonight, maybe you can sign up and he'll call your name.
Well, that's the music of Eddie Moore and the Outer Circle. The album, again, Kings and Queens. He'll perform at the Riot Room on Friday with his band. Bill Brownlee, always great to have you here. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.
You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date, and you can follow me at Steve Kraske. On tomorrow's show, how to appreciate, believe it or not, the long drive through Kansas along I-70 and the complexities that older men face coming out in rural communities. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Claire Tatacoro. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.